Thanks so much. And before I start my presentation, I wanted to note that the work of Catherine Haywood and Women with a Vision is one of the things featured in this new report we've just put out from Raising Women's Voices called The Personal Touch, Reaching and Enrolling Uninsured Women and LGBT People. There are copies in the back. There are a few up here at the table. You're welcome to come on up and get one. It's really inspiring work. So as Cindy said, I'm going to talk about what we're doing for women and the Affordable Care Act implementation in the more progressive states. The theme of this whole conference is healthography, and you're seeing it in action here with the South and some of the Midwest and Western states really fighting the implementation of the ACA. And meanwhile, in states like New York, where I come from, D.C., District of Columbia, California, Illinois, there's an embracing of the ACA, and we're trying to use opportunities in those states to see what are the best possible policies we could get them adopted in those states, and then move from there to try to eventually roll them out in some of the other states. So I do this work from our New York office with Kyle Marie Stock, who's our Model States Policy Manager, and we work with a different collection of the regional coordinators than Cecilia does. We work with the ones in these progressive states. I'm supposed to say I have no relationships with any commercial interests, unfortunately, that are relevant to this position presentation. No commercial interests whatsoever. So, again, our goal is to get the best possible policies adopted in the more progressive states. We're carrying out this work with regional coordinators in states like California, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Maryland, Rhode Island, New York, Oregon, and Washington. We're advocating for the best possible policies we can get for women, LGBT people, and families in as many states as possible. There is a handout here with our 9 model policies, which you're welcome to come up and get. I'm just going to highlight a few of them because I don't have time for all 9 of them today. One of them is going to be ensuring compliance with the Affordable Care Act contraceptive coverage rules. Now, I'm sure many of you are familiar with the Women's Preventive Services Amendment to the Affordable Care Act and HHS rules implementing it, which require insurers to cover all FDA-approved forms of contraception without cost sharing. This is a huge victory for not only for Raising Women's Voices, but for all women. HHS rules do permit some use of what is termed medical management, which basically allows insurance companies to slip-slide around the rules a little bit. And we've been looking into this in some of the progressive states, including New York. We have found that some of the insurers are going a little bit too far with the medical management loophole. Some plans are not covering all FDA-approved contraceptive methods, and some are collecting copays for certain types of contraception or brands. Recently, the biggest problems we've been finding is that they're not covering the NuvaRing. And we have found that in some states they are charging a copay for a brand name when there's no generic alternative, or when the generic alternative is not medically appropriate for that woman. Some of them are trying to force women to use step therapy, which you may be familiar with, basically says if we're going to give you a brand name, you have to try the generic first and see if that works. But unfortunately, the contraception failure has a huge price, and so it is really not appropriate to use step therapy with contraception. So what are we doing about it? In New York, we piloted a big project in which we did secret shopper calls to all 18 health plans on our marketplace. We looked at all the formularies online. We called the insurance companies. We talked with their customer service representatives. We found some real problems. We wrote a letter to state officials. We are encouraging them to issue a guidance letter to insurers and come up with standard formulary language that will eliminate some of these undesirable variations. There is potential for new state legislation that would address these gaps. Recently, California has enacted such a bill. It strengthened their existing state contraceptive coverage law by limiting use of medical management techniques. And we are drafting a similar piece of legislation in New York and working with our coordinators in some of the other states to do this. Here's another area where we're trying to make the policy the best we can. Women who are enrolled in one of those private qualified health plans that they buy through the marketplace, sometimes with financial assistance, if they become pregnant, they may suddenly become eligible for Medicaid when they were not before, because the income eligibility limit for Medicaid is higher if you're pregnant. That could be a good thing. You know, it could lower your out-of-pocket costs during pregnancy, delivery, immediate postpartum. But changing from a QHP plan to Medicaid could mean you might lose your doctor, and you might have other service disruptions. So we're trying to figure out what to do here. Some states are not giving a woman a choice. They just have to be bumped over into Medicaid. And there really is lack of sufficient guidance for women who are in this situation about what to do. What we're doing about it is first encouraging our coordinators to look at their own state's policy. Do women in this situation have to switch to Medicaid, or could they be given a choice? We're looking at whether the provider networks whether there's some overlap between the Medicaid provider networks and the QHP provider networks, such that there might be sufficient number of common doctors that it wouldn't be that much of a problem. We're going to educate women on their options, ensure that the transition between the QHP and Medicaid is smooth. And until Friday, we were trying to advocate for a Medicaid wrap around qualified health plan coverage, but new rules that just came out from CMS on Friday make this not possible, so I'm not going to talk about that option. There is a thing called the Basic Health Program, which some of our states are adopting. New York is the first one to adopt it, and it will go into effect next year. It's really low-cost coverage above the Medicaid eligibility limit, up to 200% of poverty. And that is, in fact, the income range where many women would have this problem of being in a QHP and then suddenly becoming eligible for Medicaid. So we're hoping to use the BHP to enroll those women and not have a disruption in their coverage, not having to bump them from one plan to another. Another important issue is ensuring confidentiality of dependents on health insurance. Because of the ACA, many more individuals, especially those young adults up to age 26, are being covered as dependents on family health insurance policies. And that's a really good thing for many reasons. It's gotten health coverage for many more young adults. However, as any of you with health insurance know, the explanation of benefits statement gets sent home to the policyholder, not to the dependent. So if a young person goes and gets an abortion or STI treatment or goes to an LGBT-friendly health insurer, it could be a big problem at home if the EOB statement arrives at home and says what happened. And there are many examples of what we're calling sensitive services in this policy realm: abortion, contraception, testing treatment for STIs and HIV, mental health care, and substance use disorder treatment. So what can we do to protect the dependents in this situation? And I should say that it's not just young adults, it's also women who are in abusive relationships and may not want an abusive spouse to know they've accessed some of these services. We're advocating for regulatory or legislative policies that would essentially allow patients to opt out of having those EOBs sent home. Permit the patient to choose whether an EOB is sent to the policyholder or to the patient. Require the insurer perhaps to send the EOB only to the patient who receives services. California, again, is in the lead on this. They've enacted a piece of legislation that says that insurers are not permitted to disclose to policyholders if a dependent under age 26 uses these sensitive services. Dependents over age 26 can request non-disclosure if they feel the disclosure would harm them, such as an abusive spouse. It doesn't go in effect until January, though, so there's no experience yet with how this is going to work. We're all going to be looking at this very closely to see how this might work. There's some other approaches we're discussing, especially in states that might not have the kind of great Democratic majority, frankly, in the legislature that California does. Work with insurers to develop standard EOB language that doesn't disclose the type of visit or service provided. However, there still could be a privacy breach in that situation if the provider is known for providing certain services. So it might say you went to Planned Parenthood for something, not say what it is, but even that visit to Planned Parenthood could cause trouble at home. Or you went in New York City, you went to the Cal and Lord Health Center, which is known for LGBT-friendly healthcare. If a parent saw that a child had gone to Cal and Lord Health Center, they could deduce some things from that. Another option is to permit insurers to suppress EOBs when the service is provided without cost sharing. Right? Remember, the whole purpose of EOBs, it was a consumer disclosure measure to make sure that consumers knew what their insurance companies were charging when they went to the doctor for things. Since there's no cost sharing for contraception, the original reason for an explanation of benefit statement doesn't apply. So how about if we say no EOBs get sent home for these services without cost sharing? Or if the patient pays for it in full, but that's, again, not an option for many people. We've also seen some obstacles to coverage of abortion. As you know, the ACA allows coverage of abortion in private health plans sold in marketplaces, but, as you heard Cecilia mention, states are allowed to prohibit abortion coverage, and many of them have. Abortion may not be included in the essential health benefits statement that your state marketplace adopts. Some states have banned it entirely. 27 states and DC have allowed it, but only some insurers are actually offering it. And it's not that easy to find out, as I was discussing earlier with the researcher from the Kaiser Family Foundation. In addition, the GAO recently put out a report criticizing state marketplace compliance with the Nelson Abortion Amendment. And that's causing some of the state marketplaces to get nervous and perhaps do some things that we think would be unfortunate because we've managed to achieve some good policies in some states. So methods of increasing abortion coverage, we need to get more women trying to find out whether your state permits plans sold in the marketplace to include it, utilize secret shopper calls to collect data on the availability of coverage, certainly urge more plans to cover it if allowed, work long term to lift those abortion coverage bans in some places, and work with your marketplace to ensure non-burdensome compliance with the payment segregation rules. Essentially, what I mean by that is instead of having to send the policyholder two bills, one for abortion coverage and one for everything else, as you would think would be required under the Nelson Amendment, we've been able to get many states to just send one bill. And sometimes it's itemized, and sometimes it isn't. Because really, this all can be handled on the back end through accounting. The money is all going to the insurance company, and the insurance company can just segregate the portion for the abortion payment, which has to be at least $1 a month, remember, into a separate fund. We're also working to make sure abortion is covered in states that are creating a basic health program like New York. So want more information on any of these policies? You can certainly talk to me afterwards, but you can also email either myself or Kyle Marie Stock, our Model States Policy Manager. Thank you.